Okay, welcome to the webinar today, guys. We're going to get started here. Hopefully, it's giving you guys enough time to get on. This is the Future of Cannabis in Canada webinar, going to be presented by myself, moderating in light command, but we're going to hand it over to our experts today, who are Everett Knight, Executive VP of Strategy Investments from Balanced Growers Corp, and Chris Fair, President and CEO of Residence Consultancy, to bring this report home. So I'm going to hand it off to Chris here. Guys, can I have a few words here before we get started?
Great. Thanks, Kayla. Chris Fair here from Residence Consultancy. I'm excited to be here with you today. And Everett from Balanced, our sponsor for this particular report. At Residence, we're focused on understanding consumer preferences, specifically around real estate, tourism, and those may not be obvious connections to cannabis on the forefront, but as we looked at and tried to understand the implications of legalization of cannabis in Canada, you know, we saw that there were both issues and opportunities around commercial retail development, you know, of looking at the numerous facilities that were about to open for the distribution and sale of cannabis, you know, also looking at what some of the implications are from a leisure perspective on consumer behavior. And then also because of our interest in tourism, of looking at the future potential of cannabis to be a driver for tourism. As a result, we partnered with Balanced GrowWorks to conduct a study that occurred just in December of 2018 to go out 60 days after legalization and really gauge what were the interests, aspirations, and intentions of Canadians with respect to cannabis. So as part of this study, we looked at two particular segments. First, over 1,000 Canadians amongst a general population sample, just to understand first and foremost what percentage of the population is consuming cannabis today and who are those Canadian cannabis consumers. And then we oversampled that to conduct a study with 1,500 Canadians across the country who had consumed cannabis in the past year to dive deeper into understanding, you know, their behavior and perception towards cannabis, what their preferences and attitudes were towards cannabis since legalization, and also trying to understand what are some of the differences among demographic subgroups. And of course, here on the right, you can see some of the details just around the methodology from a statistical perspective if you're interested. Anything else on that, Everett, before we get started?
No, I just like to thank everyone for coming, and this is a report that we're very passionate about, and I think statistics and data is really going to move forward the industry, and we're honored just to be a part of this report. So I'll chime in as needed here, Chris.
Great. So there's kind of 10 key findings that we're going to walk through today, and, you know, first looking a little bit around, you know, usage of where Canadians are consuming cannabis. Second, we can get a little bit into what the implications are in legalization, and we did see in that first 60-day period that more Canadians were consuming cannabis as a result of legalization. We'll talk a little bit around the products and preferences in terms of how cannabis is currently consumed and how Canadian cannabis consumers would like to consume products, cannabis-oriented products in the future. We'll get into a little bit around the black market and how Canadians are currently purchasing cannabis. While the majority of Canadian cannabis consumers would prefer to purchase it legally, the majority of cannabis is still being purchased through black market channels. Talk a little bit about medical marijuana, you know, which has been legal prior, and what percentage of Canadian consumers are using cannabis for medicinal purposes. Then we'll get a little bit into, for those that have purchased, whether it's online or through new retail outlets, what their experience has been like and what they see as important. And the seventh one here, we'll get a little bit deeper into that around the future of cannabis distribution from a retail perspective. And then talk a little bit around some of the implications for the alcohol industry. And we look specifically, you know, what is the overlap between alcohol consumption, cannabis consumption, and what are some of the perceptions around that? And you'll see that cannabis is, amongst Canadian cannabis consumers, cannabis is perceived to be as a healthier alternative to alcohol or less negative effects. Then we'll also, I think it was interesting getting into this of looking at, in light of legalization and some of the current restrictions around the marketing of cannabis products, what are those attitudes and awareness around restrictions to the marketing of cannabis products? And I think that was one of the things that probably surprised us out of this, was that the majority of Canadian cannabis consumers support current regulations and restrictions around the marketing of cannabis products. So an interesting takeaway out of this. And then lastly, we'll sort of finish off just on looking at some of the insights around the consumption of cannabis in public places and how cannabis could also potentially be a driver of tourism to destinations in Canada where cannabis is cultivated. So with that, let's dive in and go into this a little bit in more detail. I think the first is, you know, looking at and thinking about the relationship between cannabis and alcohol consumption. So 6 in 10 Canadian cannabis users think that cannabis is a healthier alternative to alcohol, having fewer side effects, and 57% perceive cannabis as less addictive than alcohol. I don't think that really surprised us. Of course, asking cannabis consumers, obviously since they're consuming, we expected them to look at that more favorably. But I think there's some, you know, longer term potential implications here. Will cannabis start to cannibalize alcohol sales? You know, we see that in the U.S. last year, that sales volume of alcohol dropped almost 1% last year, with beer leading the charge. You know, is that because of cannabis and the growing legalization of it? Remains to be seen, but this is a trend that we'll be tracking. Obviously, this is why, you know, we start to see, you know, brands like Molson's, Constellation, and Anheuser are getting into this space. You know, I think it's both a opportunistic and also a defensive strategy with respect to looking at how adults in both the U.S. and Canada may consume legal products such as alcohol and cannabis in the future. Do you have any thoughts on that, Everett, in terms of your observations around the relationship between cannabis consumption and alcohol?
Yeah, from our standpoint, even when you look at the consumers and as you get informed and you're saying it's less calories and you have no hangover, I think consumers, that really resonates with them. And what we're seeing is more and more people are going that. Even if you look at in the U.S., Washington State, in 2017, 1% of the overall cannabis sales came from cannabis-infused beverages. And then in 2018, it grew to 2%. So it's still a low base, but you're seeing great growth there. And as you get better technologies where you actually have it and experience it like an alcoholic beverage, I think it's going to be a game changer. And even when we look at some of the U.S. states, some of the actual states themselves have alcohol sales down 15% at different times. So, this is a category we're really excited for, and a lot of our customers are looking at it as an angle to put on market once this becomes legal in Canada by October this year.
All right. So I think, you know, as we looked at the growth of the cannabis industry and there, you know, other studies, we didn't specifically look at labor, but I think that is, you know, one of the big issues, not just for this industry, but for industries, you know, across the country. Labor has never been tighter. Unemployment has never been lower in most parts of the country. That we're looking here from others that have done some research around projecting the number of jobs that the industry is going to create and the labor that it's going to require. And here we see, you know, from Brian Sicandi, the managing director at 189 Search Inc., and the founder of Careers Cannabis, you know, he expects that the number of jobs to rise to 18,000 this year and spike to 25,000 next year, with a, you know, long-term estimate that we'd be looking at employing 40,000 to 60,000 people within this industry. What are some of, Everett, maybe you can speak to some of the issues or challenges that you've had around attracting labor and the particular types of roles that you're looking for as you guys ramp up for this the growth that this industry is experiencing.
Yeah, I think it's really changing. Like we've gone from a few employees only a few years ago to over 70 employees today, and I think it's rapidly changing people's perception on cannabis. But it's still seen as volatile, and some people are hesitant to leave their stable jobs to go in the industry. But I think every day you're seeing more and more people seeing the revenues and seeing how real this industry is going to be, not only in Canada, but globally. And I think more and more people are actually coming to the industry and interest. So the interest levels are coming. And obviously, with the employment where it is, it's always tough attracting good talent. And you got to do it different way as a company and make sure you're always putting your best foot forward. But I think it's improved quite a bit, and I think we have a ways to go.
All right. So those are some of the high-level issues, you know, thinking about relationship between competition between the alcohol industry, cannabis industry, labor. Let's dive into looking at the market side in terms of, you know, what is the market in Canada. I think that's probably something that, you know, most people on the webinar, you know, are interested in. And, you know, we found that 27% of Canadian adults are cannabis consumers. So that equates to, you know, roughly 8 million people that consumed some form of cannabis in 2018. And it was very specifically, you know, we looked at amongst those what percentage of Canadian consumers had just started consuming or reported consuming since legalization. And we found that 5% of Canadian consumers reported as, you know, new entrants into cannabis consumption in that first 60 days of legalization. So that's a, you know, fairly significant spike in a short period of time. It'll be interesting to look at and monitor that to see, you know, will we see continued growth, you know, or was that a one-time bump just based on the fact that the product was now legalized? When you look at why people are consuming cannabis, you know, we looked at a variety of reasons here, and you can see that the main reason is the consumption for recreational, not medicinal reasons. So you can see that 21% of our cannabis consumers reported, or of adults, are consuming for recreational reasons versus, you know, 17% consuming for medicinal reasons. So there's some overlap in there in terms of consumption for you know, multiple reasons. And then you can also look on down the line here into some of the other ways cannabis is consumed. I think it was particularly interesting looking at cannabis and its relationship with alcohol, and we found that, you know, 16% of Canadians consume cannabis and have alcohol as a drink together. So a lot, the majority, a little bit more than half of cannabis is being consumed, you know, by itself versus being consumed, you know, with alcohol. Any thoughts there, Everett, on the cannabis consumption?
Yeah, I think, albeit we're a little biased, we believe it's going to grow and continue. And with especially, like, we view this as cannabis 2.0 this year in Canada, where you have the legalization of edibles and concentrates and cannabis-infused beverages, vape pens, et cetera. And if you look at the kind of the data of the U.S., we've seen a lot of growth there. And even in some markets, it's 50-50 for oil-based products. And for us being an extraction company, we're really excited to see the products come online this year. And from our expectations, or at least our hope, and what we hear from our customers, is that we think that continues to grow as you bring on new products and kind of new ways for the consumer to actually consume cannabis.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what, you know, as we also looked at in terms of projected use, where we asked Canadians, you know, and it was approximately one-third of Canadian adults saying that they are likely to use some form of cannabis in the next year. So this, you know, if this forecast bears out, we'll be, you know, looking at that as an addition of around, you know, 1.5 million new Canadian cannabis users entering the market in 2019. So that could be a significant growth that we could experience here this year. So who are these Canadian cannabis consumers? You know, interesting that the when you look at the split here between general population, you can see in the blue, you know, 51% female, 49% male. But our cannabis consumers here in the pink skew 55% male, 44% female. So I think we've all known, or anecdotally, that would have guessed that cannabis consumers do skew male, but it's not as much as most people would think, or as stereotypes would lead you to believe. You know, there's a slight difference there, but significant opportunities, and I think we probably have not delved enough into understanding what are the interests of female cannabis consumers. differ from male cannabis consumers is something that we're interested in as we think about the development of new products and distribution from, you know, retail perspective as well. So busting a few myths there. I think it was also interesting of looking at cannabis consumption based on household income. And here you can kind of look at the general population in blue versus cannabis consumers in pink. And you see that cannabis consumption actually mirrors pretty closely the distribution by income of households in Canada. So cannabis is being consumed across all income levels, not just, you know, whether affluent, middle class, or less affluent Canadians, that we're seeing consumption across the board. Of course, age-wise, it does skew slightly younger. So 18 to 35-year-olds lead the pack in terms of cannabis consumption, with 45% of 18 to 35-year-olds in Canada saying that they consume cannabis versus 31% of those that are 35 to 54 and 24% for those that are 55 plus. So I don't think that probably surprises anyone that younger people are consuming cannabis at higher rates. But I think it's particularly interesting to look at and see that almost 50% of those that are 18 to 34 year olds are consuming cannabis. So if that trend holds up, we could see, you know, even higher rates of growth over time, even if new, you know, older Canadians were not to consume cannabis in higher rates of frequency, the percentage of Canadians consuming cannabis overall would naturally go over time. If these 18 to 34-year-olds continue to consume cannabis at the same levels, and, you know, the next generation of 18 to 34-year-olds takes up cannabis consumption at the same or perhaps even higher levels. So there's that X factor in terms of growth that will happen just based on demographics as this population ages, assuming that these millennials continue to consume cannabis with the same same level of frequency. Anything, Everett, on that from your observations of who the Canadian cannabis consumer is?
Yeah, you know, I think it's fantastic data on this front, because I feel like a lot of our clients and customers come to us and they say, hey, what's the demographic, or what products should we put to this demographic? And it really breaks the typical stoner stereotype, where you actually see nearly equal usage among the different stakeholder groups and life stages. And I think that was very important for us, and especially as new and move brands and cannabis becomes more socially acceptable, I think you're going to see that change substantially, as it has in some of the more sophisticated U.S. states. And it's something we're really excited about, because the product development angle, before, when you were targeting your 26-year-old male, and now it's a 42-year-old female, and it's a mom, it's a totally different demographic, and it's when you actually do the product development behind it, you can actually come up with some exciting things.
Right. So one of the things you looked at amongst these Canadian cannabis consumers of looking at, you know, why they consume cannabis, and also looking at that to see if there were any differences by age. And you do see some very distinct differences amongst these age cohorts in terms of, you know, why they're consuming cannabis. Interestingly, relaxation actually is a little bit higher than for fun recreational use. So I think, and then you can see that relationship here of, you know, drilling down into what are more specific reasons beyond relaxation to relieve stress, to help me sleep, reduce anxiety, help me escape, and then last year around providing relief for a medical illness condition. So you can look at those in aggregate, but as you break this down and you look at it amongst specific demographics, you can see that this recreational use is really concentrated among the young and youngest, you know, 79% of 18 to 34-year-olds, 75% of 35 to 54, and 66% of 55-plus do it for fun. So, you know, this idea about recreational use does, as purpose for cannabis consumption, does go decline with age. And you can see that the use to provide relief for a medical illness or condition goes up. So we have, you know, 58% of our 55-plus aged consumers are consuming cannabis for relief of medical illness or condition. So there's, you know, similar, same products, but can be purchased and consumed for, you know, different motivations, different drivers, based on the demographic group that that you're targeting. What have you seen in terms of cannabis consumption or differences, Everett, when of why Canadians are consuming cannabis?
Yeah, I think it ranges, and each one of our customers have a different strategy. But I think what you're going to see is evolved. It's hard to brand in Canada currently, from a retail store standpoint with the labeling and restrictions we currently have, and it really comes down to the quality and actually experience of the product. And a lot of our customers are actually going in there and saying, okay, this is more formulated for sleep, or this is more formulated wellness. And as much as you can't say that on the product itself, from a consumer standpoint, when you get repeat customers, it's because they felt a positive experience or that reinforces that. And I think that's important. And this is great data to have on that.
All right. So, you know, kind of next going into, you know, from the why to the how of, you know, forms of cannabis consumption. So we looked at and asked Canadian cannabis consumers, what form do you consume your cannabis in? And not surprisingly that the classic joint is still the current preferred method of consumption, with 68% of Canadian cannabis consumers choosing this method over others such as edibles, vapes, oil, and drinks. But interestingly, even though younger users prefer to have a joint, other forms of consumption are becoming increasingly common, particularly amongst these younger users. And we saw a lot of interest in some of these different forms, particularly around edibles. So it'll be interesting to see how that takes off with as legalization of edibles comes on the scene. And also there's some interest here, you know, in right now we're not seeing very little consumption around beverages, but we, you know, knowing many of the entrants into the space expecting a proliferation of beverage oriented products, so you know, that could influence behavior in that particular area. But you know, the fact I think that smoking cannabis is the most popular form of consumption, and yet you know, our current regulatory environment has made smoking illegal in most public places, and we're going to see how that affects where cannabis is consumed currently. So the development of, you know, new vehicles and opportunities to deliver cannabis products through other channels is going to be important to, as we look at where cannabis can be or will be consumed in the public realm and public environment. What are you seeing, Everett, in terms of how cannabis is being used by Canadians?
Yeah, cannabis consumption today in Canada, like as you said, is really dominated by dry cannabis, because from oil-based products on the market today, you really have tinctures, you have some capsules, and tinctures, for those of you that don't know what they are, it's really the eyedropper, and then you have some sprays, right? And that's really the variety on the market today from oil-based products. But what will be interesting to see, and we'll have to actually do have more data come the legalization of edibles and concentrate, because that'll be an exciting to see that shift. Do people, with it being illegal to smoke in so many places, do they shift to more edible based products? And I think that's what we're really looking forward to coming October.
So if I can say one quick thing there, Everett, when you look at the American market, you see a much higher concentration of people using the vape pens, using flower still, and even a little bit more skewed to the beverages. Did it surprise you to see edibles as that top one for Canadians? Does that make us different?
Yeah, you know, it is definitely a different stat from our standpoint. And I think a lot of our customers are actually showing us that, saying, okay, that is exactly what maybe Canadians want more, where some people want vape pens, but maybe in Canada, edibles category is going to be bigger than people think. And that's what we're hearing from our customers as well. So I think this data really mirrors some differences between that U.S. and Canadian marketplace.
Right. So this next slide really speaks to that, of where we began to look at how would you like to consume cannabis. And you can see this around those that that they definitely will or definitely probably will. So specific to edibles, you know, we have 58% of Canadian cannabis consumers said they definitely or probably would consume edible products versus 44% around cannabis oils. And, you know, I think that's interesting around looking at vaping as, you know, alternative to the traditional joint that the 46% of Canadians surveyed still prefer it as a way to get high, and that's probably due to its discrete capabilities and quick effects. But, you know, vaping could be an alternative to that if that's made available. And then you can see here around, even in the cannabis and drinks, where 30% told us they definitely or probably would. So, you know, I think the Canadian market is really fertile territory for innovation around a variety of different cannabis products here. Anything else on that, Everett?
No, I think we already got it in our end. I think he did a great job.
Great. So, you know, as I mentioned, you kind of think about, you know, it's interesting, there's an inherent conflict here between consumer behavior or that we prefer in Canada to consume, to smoke cannabis primarily currently, but, and yet that is illegal in, you know, most buildings, many condo associations, that, you know, not specific to cannabis, but, you know, specific to smoking in general. So one of the things that we were particularly interested in is trying to understand, you know, what types of situations and occasions, first of all, do Canadian cannabis consumers consume cannabis? And then where, and that we'll look at next. So you can see here that, you know, regularly, you know, cannabis is most frequently consumed in Canadians' own homes. That's the most regular, with 47% of Canadian cannabis consumers saying they're regularly consume it in their own home. Then, you know, or, and then a lot of that is happening, you know, while alone. So you can see over here that 37% are regularly consuming cannabis alone versus only 18% are regularly consuming it at a party, or 23% consuming it with friends. So I think in general, you can kind of characterize that, you know, cannabis currently is a relatively more private oriented experience primarily, and that it's occasionally being consumed, you know, with friends or in a friend and family member's home. But the predominant occasion for use is actually a private experience. What have you seen, Everett, in terms of thoughts on where people are and what types of occasions people are consuming cannabis?
Well, we don't usually follow the consumer where they're doing it, but I think it's great data that we didn't have before, right? And I think this opens up some way, because exactly what we were looking for is data to say where do they consume, and this is kind of one of the first areas that I've seen from this big of a study seeing data on this area. And my biggest curiosity as an extraction company is just how that changes with more varieties of cannabis coming online. When you get edibles, concentrate, when you have a vape pen that can put in your suit jacket pot if you're working downtown, or you can put it in your jeans and you can just pull it out at any standpoint, does that change it? Or if you wanted to just eat it in a gummy, or we're going to see what regulations come, but if you'd want to eat it edible quickly, does that change kind of the social aspect of it as well? And even if you look at alcohol in general, it's more social because it's sold in stores. So with a cannabis-infused beverages, does that kind of bridge that gap into a more social setting for cannabis?
If I could add one thing here, when you go from the type of cannabis that has been consumed over the last little while, the majority of it has been very, very high THC strains. However, do you see a change in that market coming when we have more of these balanced strains and different cultivars coming online for these people to create different experiences for them that might push that sentiment from that kind of couch potato or very, very heavy high versus something that's a little bit more manageable in the marketplace?
Yeah, I really am interested in the microdosing of cannabis as well. I think it is changing, and the consumer's preferences are changing, just like the consumer is as well. Like we've seen in the study, some surprises, and I think that we can have more data on that as these different formats come available. But I do think people are using it not only just to get high and that really big head high. It's now for sleep. maybe you're microdosing it for pain. It's really everything, and we're seeing it for so many different things. The formulations that we're currently creating in-house for our customers target different parts of that. And I'm really curious to see when the edibles and goth drinks come online, if there's a big change in that instance.
I think one of the interesting observations around when you look at cannabis, you know, pre, obviously, legalization as an illegal activity, obviously lended itself to, you know, more private forms of consumption, which is quite the opposite of alcohol. But if you look back to the, you know, consumption of alcohol was very highly regulated initially and also a very private form of consumption. And, of course, today it's the exact opposite where, you know, alcohol is very social, you know, and there's almost a stigma to consuming alcohol alone. You know, I think it's likely that we would see, you know, assuming with the, you know, products, regulations evolve over time, that it's, why wouldn't we expect the form and occasion for cannabis consumption to follow the pattern of alcohol, where it becomes a more social experience than it historically has been. You know, which kind of takes us into, you know, our next, you know, area that we're particularly interested in at Resonance, which was, you know, around how would people like to consume cannabis in, from a physical or a geographic perspective. And of course, you know, the regulations don't currently exist or, you know, allow for most of these activities currently. But this is where, you know, we think there'd be demand and opportunity as we develop and evolve legislation, you know, around cannabis consumption. So you can see here we were testing a variety of hypotheses around various forums for public forums for consumption. You know, most popular being visiting a cafe or restaurant where cannabis edibles, drinkables are served. So we see that, you know, 53% of current Canadian cannabis consumers would definitely or probably consume in that kind of an environment if it was available. You know, or visiting a consumption place. If you think about, you know, a tasting lounge where you can try different cannabis products similar to, you know, a wine bar or a winery. Very similar results here in terms of versus edibles, drinkables versus smoking and vaping. You can see that 50%. So almost the exact same result. So here it's less about, you know, the product and more about the experience that, you know, roughly the same amount of people are interested in consuming cannabis in a cafe or restaurant, whether it's smoking and vaping or edibles and drinkables. And I think also then we looked at this idea about, you know, how many people would be interested in visiting a cannabis growing or manufacturing facility to do a tour. I mean, you think about the growth of wine tourism, you know, over the years, and I think that there's an opportunity here that cannabis could follow, you know, that very same pattern. What have you seen ever in terms of, you know, when are your thoughts around potential forums or opportunities for around places of consumption?
Yeah, I think this data is really exciting because I don't think it's if we ever get in a cafe or restaurants, it's really when. So we've seen a lot of jurisdictions that have legalized it. It might take 10 years, but from this data, you're seeing that most of the population then is saying if they consume it, you'd assume that they would also want to consume it and vote for that from a legislation standpoint. So I think it'll be interesting to see in Canada over the next 5 years how the legalization of different cannabis alternatives actually changes the actual how you consume it, where you consume it. Even I can tell you on a tourism front, we're based in Kelowna, British Columbia, and I can tell you there's a whole bunch of people that want to come to our facility on a daily basis. And I think that's just in the beginning innings from a tourism standpoint.
All right. So this, you know, we mentioned kind of one of the highlights around looking at the future of how cannabis products you know, are marketed, which I think is, you know, was one of the, I would say probably one of the most surprising elements to me was that not only do Canadians in general support restrictions and current legislation around the marketing and promotion of cannabis products, but Canadian cannabis consumers themselves told us that they, you know, are in support of those regulations. So I think that was, again, I would have maybe expected a little bit more openness amongst Canadian cannabis consumers to relaxing some of those rules around the packaging, branding, marketing, and promotion of cannabis. But here we're, you know, we're seeing that it's the it's in fact the exact opposite. And I think that this, you know, trying to play this game of regulatory chicken between the cannabis companies is something that we're going to go through for a little while here to really determine, you know, what are the, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, what are some, everyone of course is trying to test the opportunities in and around that. But I think it's important to note here that, you know, the majority of Canadians, both that consume and don't consume, are in favor of these regulations, that, or at least some regulations or restrictions that those be maintained and kept in place. What have you seen as you work with some of your partners, and what are some of the issues around the marketing of cannabis for Valens and its partners?
Yeah, I think first of all, like, I think we got to make sure that like we're protecting children in the marketing. I think that's a very real worry, even for cannabis companies. As much as cannabis companies are always trying to push the line of what they can market, I think you got to make sure that we do this right and we do this properly, and we make sure that that youth population that isn't seeing the same advertising, just like as it is at alcohol. So I think that's an important part for us. But obviously, like, I think that cannabis companies are a little bit constrained from a marketing standpoint, even a branding of their product that they're only allowed their small label on their current products on the market. And again, I think this kind of comes down to, it's going to come down to quality of your product and the actual consumer experience, because it is very tough to market your company and every brand you have today. So I think that's important for everyone to remember.
And obviously there's a huge gap here between the regulations on alcohol and how it's allowed to market and promote, and the very tight restrictions we have on cannabis. I think it'll be interesting to me to look at it. Will cannabis regulations evolve more towards where alcohol is today? Or could we actually see the opposite happen, and that there be more and higher restrictions placed on the marketing of alcohol that align with how the restrictions around the marketing and promotion of cannabis? So how those get harmonized and where we end up on that spectrum is something that will be unique and distinct in Canada and different than what happens in the U.S., you know, or in other jurisdictions. I think this is really going to be one of the most elastic and flexible areas that I think is going to evolve through some trial and error here over the coming years. As it, you know, getting into sort of the actual sales and distribution of cannabis, and, you know, as kind of mentioned in the introduction here, that the majority of Canadian cannabis consumers are currently purchasing from a dealer or the black market. So, you know, for all of the talk, you know, around legalization and, of course, getting physical presence in stores is rolling out somewhat slowly, that we're still seeing that the black market actually has the largest share of the market. But interestingly, if you look at all this chart on the right, in terms of Canadian cannabis users' preference, 47% say they would actually prefer to purchase cannabis, you know, from a retail store. So there's a big shift and an evolution here that as we ramp up and the footprint for distribution of cannabis and sale of cannabis through retail stores is going to, we would expect, significantly eat into that black market share. So that you're seeing a lot of innovation and development then around what is that in-store experience look like. And I think that really tying back into the marketing of cannabis, because of the restrictions around marketing and advertising, that physical retail platform becomes the way in which cannabis is branded or positioned and marketed in the minds of the consumer. consumer. So looking at, and we've seen, you know, lots of very contemporary design, really positioning cannabis as an upscale luxury product. It's quite different than if you think about what does that retail environment look like in the cannabis retail outlets that we've seen versus, let's say the beer store or liquor stores. You know, it's a night and day, difference in terms of that experience. Interesting to me that, you know, around the, you know, online is not as significant, that, you know, I think there is this interest here in that online sales will exist, but these retail stores are likely to become the primary means through which cannabis is distributed once that footprint is established. Everett, what are your thoughts on the sales and distribution channels for cannabis?
Yeah, I think what we're hearing from our customers is really that the retail storefront, like even with Ontario just coming online in April, right, they, like, and only having 25 storefronts, it's really been a gradual process, and you can see why the sales ramping up are the same way, because most people do want to go into a retail store and feel that experience and actually get the information involved so that they can make a decision. And I think that's really important for us to know, and it's exciting now that we're getting more and more stores up and running, to kind of seeing the development of that and more people actually buying it, because obviously, with people going to the black market today, it'll be interesting to see how many retail stores are coming up in the future and how that changes very quickly.
Right. So this chart we looked at, just, you know, the top ones here around entertainment, cafes, restaurants, but on this one I wanted to try and draw everyone's attention to the ones at the bottom here. And this is where we were looking at specifically around cannabis as a driver of destination selection for vacations. So you can see here that one in the bottom left that we asked about staying in a hotel where smoking, vaping, cannabis is permitted, that 45% of Canadian cannabis consumers would choose a hotel where smoking, vaping is permitted. So I think that raises all kinds of, you know, interesting implications just after, you know, many of the global hotel chains have gone smoke-free. How do we now address that interest and demand amongst this significant audience of adult Canadians that would like to be able to consume cannabis when they're on vacation? So I think we'll see some interesting innovations and developments with some of our hotel clients we're having this conversation around how do you create that as an amenity and an opportunity within a hotel environment. Then this other one is, I think, quite interesting, especially to us as we work with a lot of different cities and states and counties thinking about tourism development. And we found that 25% of cannabis consumers definitely or probably would choose a vacation destination in order to visit cannabis growing manufacturing facilities and tasting rooms. And I think what's really interesting here is that, you know, this is an opportunity beyond just the economic impact that the cultivation of cannabis has in smaller cities, rural areas throughout Canada. You know, I think we talk about the jobs, economic impact, the direct benefits that those facilities and operations bring to these communities. But there's a potential larger impact and opportunity here around cannabis-oriented tourism. Cannabis-oriented tourism, I think, was first thought about, or still is currently largely thought about, based on legalization. So, of course, Colorado, one of the first places to legalize cannabis, and they, you know, quantified the economic impact of an increased number of visitors coming to Colorado because it was legal to consume there. Of course, that first mover advantage didn't last very long, as there's, you know, now 10 states where it's legal in Canada. So I think we'll see some of that, where people come to the country specifically because it's legal to consume. But as legalization spreads, that advantage or that driver to choose a destination based just on legalization alone disappears. Instead, what we see as a potential opportunity is around creating and really following in the footsteps of the wine industry of, can we look at places where cannabis is cultivated, that there are opportunities and interest to be able to try, consume products of local provenance, with that, from cannabis that's cultivated in that specific space. in California right now that is contemplating this very issue, where they have a significant amount of cannabis is cultivated in that particular county. And we know that and expect that visitors are going to come specific to that. So, you know, how does it, what are the policies, rules, regulations that need to be put in place to be able to unlock that opportunity and be able to create cannabis-oriented consumption experiences in places where cannabis is cultivated. And then this last one here, you can also see about even cannabis having the potential to influence people's real estate decisions, not just thinking about vacation, but in terms of the homes or apartments that we rent or buy, that there's a strong level of interest here in potentially looking at apartments, condominium buildings that have dedicated cannabis smoking and vaping lounges. So this is something that we'll have to monitor, evolve, and look at. Again, most condominium associations, apartment buildings have just put out blanket bans on smoking altogether on premises. So now we're looking at, well, how do we unpack that and turn that into a potential differentiator or create some sort of amenity or experience around that that would allow Canadian homeowners or renters to be able to consume cannabis within, well, generally speaking, within multifamily properties. Any other thoughts on that, Everett?
Yeah, I think it's an underestimated area, as you mentioned, with Colorado and what we've seen in other kind of states that have legalized this and showing the tourism coming to Canada. But one thing that's not mentioned, I've toured probably 100 facilities, cannabis facilities across the globe, and what's been amazing over the last 5.5 years is that people are actually building in windows in their facilities and glass doors in GMP-certified pharmaceutical-type facilities so that you can actually allow for investors and tours. And as that goes forward, even look at Smith Falls and what Canopy's done. I think that this is an area that will continue. And we've even seen people coming to the Okanagan and hearing around here anecdotally that they're coming and they're saying, oh, well, we heard cannabis was legal, and we heard this was the heart of the industry where BC bud or BC cannabis is really there. So I think it's just in the start, but some great stats on how that will go.
All right. So I guess kind of just wrapping up and want to save some room to answer a few questions. But, you know, I think that just the data that we've collected here is really just a starting point, and you know, our goal and ambition is to monitor these trends over time, or to be able to collect the data so that we can identify, you know, what are the trends in terms of growth in consumption, interests in different opportunities, products, this is going to be, yeah, just particularly over the next 2 years, kind of a frenetic time where we're going to see a whole variety of different products launched. And I imagine that the consumer will filter through and we'll see some of those products go away and demand for others increase. And you know, I think that sorting is already happening. Obviously, that interest in purchasing cannabis through retail outlets, you know, we should expect to see, you know, tremendous growth in that particular area, you know, which is an interesting opportunity. There's, you know, a lot of vacant retail space in many different cities and communities, so that may drive consumption of some of that space. And I think it'll be interesting to watch and look at the products themselves. I mean, I think there's definitely a trend as we look at the current positioning of cannabis around wellness and luxury orientation, that the looking at cannabis, regardless of the form it takes and the type of product, is going to be looked at as a more, you know, upscale product that is, you know, interesting to see how that's quite different than the positioning of the majority of beer and alcohol products. It'll be interesting to see. I think there'll be some halo effect or some effect from how we look at the marketing, distribution, positioning of cannabis, of how other categories around, you know, recreational products such as alcohol are, how they respond to that. What are your thoughts, Everett, on what comes next for cannabis?
Yeah, for us, it's really focused on cannabis 2.0 this year. Like, it's great to have all this actual data after legalization to actually show some of the trends. And we'd love to see how that continues. And again, I said at the beginning of the call, and I'll say it again today, I think data is key, because what you can do is then interpret data. And really, that's how you give consumers and patients the best products. And I think that's important for every stakeholder group throughout the value chain of the cannabis industry. And we're just excited to kind of see as the legislation by October 2019 here actually comes to light, to kind of see that progression. And then we'll have to see the data after legalization cannabis 2.0.
I think another thing to note is that we're in a place with the general consumer market that if you smoke or you don't smoke, and those are kind of where we're at. What's going to be a really beautiful thing to understand in the next little bit is what type of cannabis do you like to smoke, what terpenes are present in that, and I think that's where the trend is going to be going. If you look at Leafly or any of the largest information resources online right now, that's kind of the biggest thing. People are starting to understand what strains have what in them and what's being responsible for those effects that they're feeling. So instead of just then smoking versus not smoking, is really going to go towards understanding what makes them relax, understanding what makes them, you know, creative or whatever that might be. So it'll be interesting to get a report maybe next year. Hey, Chris?
Sounds good. Yeah, we look forward to continuing the partnership and looking to monitor and collect this data on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. So we'll roll into some questions here that you guys have here from the audience. We'll start with this one. I'm giving it to you, Chris. Why did you choose to work with us here at Valens versus other companies in the space? And that's from James Sinkeldam from Mason Capital Inc.
Yeah, I think a lot of other companies are, you know, particularly focused on the quantitative side of the cannabis industry, and all of that data is important in terms of forecasting, you know, revenue, sales, you know, et cetera. And, you know, I think we wanted to work with Valens, you know, based on our proximity being based here in British Columbia, but also based on your interest in trying to look at these forward-looking questions, but getting beyond the data of what's happening today in terms of sales, revenue, quantity, distribution. You know, all that quantitative data, as I said, is important, but, you know, we appreciated that Valens really wanted to look at the qualitative side of this to really think about what comes next, you know, which is what we're always focused on in our work at Resident.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you. Next question we have from George Lavecchia. He's asking how many times a day is CBD recommended. I would recommend that you head to, you know, articles such as Leafly to look at sort of where those realms are. It's different for everyone at the end of the day. Your endocannabinoid system is nothing like anybody else's in the world, and that's just the beauty of humans and receptors. So at the end of the day, that's definitely a doctor or doctor-based question that we don't feel comfortable answering. But I do want to show you that Leafly does have some great articles on where you can start and where you can go. And Nick Jacomas, specifically, the head research scientist there, is fantastic for information like that. Going on next, do you think cannabis use will increase once stores have inventory? From Dan Barbos from Horican. Everett, I'll give that one to you.
Yeah, I think that I think it definitely will, and I think you're already seeing that as more stores come online today. And if you look at even the sales increases in the largest producers quarter to quarter, you're seeing as more stores come online and more inventories in those stores are filled. If people are buying more of them, because what you're having is also fresh cannabis coming to the market, right? Where everyone was trying to prepare for legalization best they can with the resources that they were giving. Now that there's more greenhouses coming online every day and indoor grows or hybrid greenhouses or wherever you're actually growing, you're seeing the growth in this every single day. And because of that, you're seeing not only more inventory stores, but there's also higher quality and that it's faster from cultivation to storefront.
I think also on that exact same topic discussing earlier about the whether you like cannabis or you don't like cannabis, once people start to find that sweet spot and understand the difference between more balanced strains or CBD dominant strains versus that THC strain, I think cannabis use will have a whole other wave of consumers that maybe were scared to use it based on a previous experience, that type of thing too. So I think that there's many things that can add to that. Dan, you also asked, is there a coming tsunami of cannabis inventory? Everett, you want to speak on that, I guess, from a market supply standpoint?
Yeah, I think when you look at the space, there's obviously a whole bunch of greenhouses coming online and different cultivation facilities. And I think that the bottom line is that cannabis is harder to grow than people think. And even some people at the start of this thought that it would be an industry where you'd have 10% loss rates in crops, when we're seeing in some facilities that it's up to 40%. And I think it's a lot harder to grow, especially quality cannabis. And I think people are realizing that. So I think it does take longer than people think. And I do think we'll see an oversupply at some point. But is it another year? Is it 18 months? Is it 2 years? I think with edibles and concentrates coming online and seeing how smoothly that goes out, I think that'll really depend on the entire market from our perspective. So we're interested to see the regulations when they come up.
Awesome. Moving on here, we've got a question regarding kind of where to smoke cannabis. Vegas and Alaska recently allowed for cannabis lounges. Toronto has a patio. Could a social club membership be a way around non-smoking bylaws? That's from Bruno Lease from Bunbursky.
Yeah, I think today, like under the current regulations, a lot of it's based on interpretation. But from my interpretation, and we'll be speaking of part of Black Balance, is that today that is not something that they want. And if you look at the data in the report, obviously the consumer wants it, and they want cafes and they want restaurants. And I think that from our perspective, we look forward to see how that actually goes forward with so many people wanting that. But today, I do not think that's realistic.
So Brendan Mann from Social Okanagan Appraisals asks, how do we address issues with packaging for cannabis products? A major discord between the wants to purchase retailer online and the black market's current share, I think, has a lot to do with wasteful packaging. Have you, in your discussions, heard any sort of movements or developments to address the packaging concerns?
Yeah, it's a great question and concentration. Obviously, everyone doesn't want a whole bunch of plastic, right, in the environment. And today, what the first kind of draft of the regulations is focused on protection, right? And I think that every iteration from this will probably be opening it up and actually making and having other concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a lot of plastic today? I do think there is. Do I think it was kind of making sure we protect the society first and foremost? I do. We haven't seen, it'll be interesting to see edible packaging and when that comes out, and if you really need to have each cookie in your package or each cannabis-infused mint in each package. We'll see. And I hope they're taking that into account. And obviously, every stakeholder in the space and even the people listening, I encourage you to actually go online and actually lobby and actually give your feedback, because I think that's an important, just like the data in this report, I think it's important to make sure you give that feedback of where we can go.
Awesome. Moving on to Stephen Christen from Green Hedge. He says that I feel the leap in edible consumption from Canada versus the USA is due to the regulatory effect and the QC requirements in Canada, and as well the progression of technology and science for the production and delivery system. An unregulated edible market brings risk. Your thoughts on the current Health Canada guidelines with references to edibles, please.
Yeah, I think it's an area we have to be concerned about with edibles. There's food safety comes into play, and also cannabis testing. There's a higher regulations from a cannabis testing standpoint. So I think we're still looking forward to seeing those regulations and how they deal with it, and we hope they take safety in hand. But realistically, we don't have the final draft of that regulation yet, so it's a little early to see, but again, make sure you put in your feedback to the government.
Awesome. We have time for a couple more questions here. I'm just going to head through to, there was a recent study out of Dalhousie University that made a suggestion that people are more concerned about edible consumption, roughly 60% of individuals being concerned about overconsumption. How do you think this will impact the future of edibles? I think Ever just kind of spoke on that one. Looking at those concentrations and where we're at with those, I think that's going to very effectively help with those types of issues here in Canada versus the United States.
And I think that as different technologies and IP come online to speed up the onset of edibles, because right now the average person is waiting 30 minutes to 2 hours, and it lasts for 4 to 8 hours. And, companies are investing it throughout the space. A lot of our customers are. We've invested in technology that speeds it up to 5 to 15 minutes onset, 45 minutes to 2 hours offset, meaning you actually come down from the high. So I think that, what does that remind you? That reminds you of a beer or alcohol. And I think that, that'll be important as well going into the impact of future edibles.
Awesome. One more question here. How do you convert consumers from illicit to legal market? Regardless of price and quality, in my experience, some consumers refuse to buy legal because it is government weed. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, from my side, I think that if you look at the illicit marketplace, I think it's never going to go away, right? And that's the data we've seen in sophisticated states. But when you have proper testing and you know exactly what's in it, I think the majority of consumers that at least from the anecdotal evidence that we've seen for people, instead of maybe getting it from someone on the side of the street, they're going to walk across the street and get it at Shoppers Drug Mart because they know exactly what's in it because of the testing quality. And I think it really comes down to testing and actually knowing what you're getting into it rather than the overall quality. At least that's from my perspective on consumers today from what the data we've seen.
Beautiful. Well, I think that's it for questions today. Anybody else, you can always email us. Our emails will be on this in its final presentation within about 2 hours from here. Chris, anything you'd like to say on your behalf before we finish up here?
No, just thanks for putting this together. And again, we have hopefully answered some questions, and we have a list of new questions that we want to answer in our future research endeavors.
You know it. Well, thank you, everyone, so much for tuning in. I hope you liked it. This, like I said, it will be available within about 2 hours. We'll also have an audio copy that will be going on the Valens podcast called Extracted, if you're just looking to hang out there to hear it. And thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it, Chris.